Travolting presents Bobbin for Robin. Hosted by Jeff Sweeney and Stuart Elmore. Covering Aladdin and the King of Thieves with special guest Jill Sweeney.
Okay, so right off the bat, I'm looking at the poster for this movie, yes. Aladdin and the King of Thieves.
Yes.
It's the theatrical, or the world premiere
what
poster.
What theatrical?
The world premiere poster.
Yeah.
And it is structured, it's basically the exact same structure, weirdly, as the Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade poster.
Yeah.
Where it's like, there's the action in the middle, and then there's like the four guys in the corners.
Yes.
Huh. Okay. Yeah. So the guys are, to be clear, the Sultan, makes sense. Saluk, the main villain of the movie, makes sense. The King of Thieves, of course. And it's just like, what's this? What's this trickle fuck down in the other corner? Like, what's he doing? It's like the guy who has like three of himself. The triplets. But like, why are
his brothers there?
Why is he one of the four quads of this poster? Like the captain of the guard, Razul, is also on the poster. He's just like hanging out in the back. Put him up there. I don't know.
No, he's like a force against them.
You could have used Osiris, like. It's really upsetting to me. It's actually really driving me.
It really is like Last Crusade.
It's the exact same structure as the Last Crusade poster.
Wow.
Because this is their Last Crusade.
This is the thing is, we talked a little bit in the Aladdin episode about how that movie is like trying to evoke like an Indiana Jones thing.
Yeah.
It's like Disney trying to do that style of movie.
Mm-hmm.
And this is after Return of the Jafar, people didn't like it. They're trying to hark back to the original in this one the same way that Last Crusade is trying to hark back to Raiders.
Yeah.
And I guess they're just like, what if the poster was the same? Someone had that idea. Anyway, it's a good poster.
Jeffrey, I don't remember, we used to watch this movie a lot when we were kids.
We had the VHSs for all three Aladdins, and we would always skip Return of Jafar.
I also think, so at our net, we would spend a lot of time with our Nana. Growing up, and I think this was like one of the few Disney VHS tapes she had.
Yes,
I don't know why she had this one and not the other two. It was like this, the Aristocats, Mary Poppins,
a good lineup,
and Pooh's Grand Adventure,
all timer lineup, IMO.
And that was what we like would watch when we were over there. So we watched this movie quite a bit.
I do like have a weird sense of nostalgia for this movie in particular. There's like, Stuart, you might. You might be able to help me with this, like describe this a little better.
Mm-hmm.
There's like a certain aesthetic to this, not Aladdin 1, an aesthetic to this one that is also evocative of, God help me, Sinbad and the Beyond the Veil of Mists.
It's almost like it feels like video game, cinematic cartoons.
There's like some sort of like 1997. To 2003, there's some sort of like video game aesthetic.
I got it. Are you ready?
Yes.
So
there's a lot of video games that like have like a Middle Eastern temple level.
Okay. Yeah. You played the original PS2 Battlefront games.
Yes.
Have you played the campaigns of those games?
Yes, of course.
Do you remember how the cinematic cut sequences, particularly in Battlefront 1, just cuts to clips of the movie?
Yes.
Of like Return of the Clones,
yeah.
Or Attack of the Clones.
Return of the Clones.
Sorry.
Oh, brother! On May the
but you know how like the because of how it's like copied onto the game,
yeah.
The quality like gets really bad. It's like that, this movie.
The thing I'm specifically thinking about is like. This is the weird pull is like, I had this like Rugrats game called Rugrats Royal Ransom.
Yeah.
And there was like the level where like you go into the kid's imagination of like a desert temple,
mm-hmm.
and there's like genies in there.
Yeah.
That you're fighting.
Yeah.
And then like Mario would have levels like every like video game from that like 6 year period of time.
Yeah.
Would have a level where you go to like, for lack of a better term, like a Middle Eastern temple,
mm-hmm.
or an Egyptian temple.
Mm-hmm.
And it was something about the graphical quality of that era and the type of music they would play.
Yeah.
That is so evocative of this movie in particular.
Yeah.
I felt nostalgia because they were playing one of the songs and I just instantly remembered the old VHS tapes where they'd show you all the previews for Disney's other films coming up. And that song was in the preview.
Is it Welcome to the 40 Thieves?
Yes, that one.
It's the...
I'll save it right away. The music, not that good in this movie.
It's good for a live straight to video film.
The music, not that good. However... To be clear.
It's another day in Agrabah.
There's a party here in Agrabah, and I'm not sure that will go. The Robin Williams songs actually kind of go.
Not the other, not his father and son. That's not a good one.
Father and son. Are you in or out? Come on.
How's that one go?
Are you in or out? That's the kind of the vibe.
It's a very, like, this feels even more like cheap Broadway musical kind of vibe.
This is off Broadway.
The thing about Disney sequels. let's quickly go in.
Yeah.
So I will
just
say
be very careful.
I'm adjusting it.
Okay, good.
I will say compared to like some of the slop that they were churning out.
Yeah.
This is like upper tier. I wouldn't say like good,
mm-hmm.
but like compared to Cinderella 3, A Twist in Time.
You have to understand, I have not seen most of the direct-to-video
sequels.
I haven't either. I just would remember seeing previews and I was like, what is this?
Lion King 2, Simba's Pride. I like that one
a lot. The thing...
But that was that direct-to-video?
So the first direct-to-video one is Return of Jafar. That starts the whole thing.
Okay.
And then right after that, it's Gargoyles the movie, which doesn't really count
mm-hmm.
Because that's a TV show adaptation. But then it's King of Thieves. So they knock out both of these before they really, you know, get into it in earnest. But the thing is, like, most of them aren't very good.
Mm-hmm.
No, the animation's not great.
The animation is a massive downturn. And a lot of them just, like, they aren't very good stories. Like, they're sequelizing something that doesn't need a sequel.
Yeah.
The two that kind of work.
Mm-hmm.
Lion King 2 is whatever. The Lion King 2 actually has some okay songs because they got Elton John back a little bit. Or
what's
like,
that's like, he's here with you. Okay.
There's some songs from the Broadway show.
It's because they pull songs from the Broadway show into it.
Yeah.
And then also like Elton John like kind of consults a little bit.
Mm-hmm. They have Lebo M doing it.
Lebo M comes back. Mm-hmm. But then the one that like actually works really well.
I know what this is.
Is Lion King 1.5.
Oh.
Have you ever seen Lion King 1.5, sir?
Yes.
The thing about The Lion King, all these Disney sequels, it's like, it's Aladdin. Aladdin is based on Aladdin and the Lamp, the story from 1001 Arabian Nights.
Mm-hmm.
Has an ending.
Mm-hmm.
It's over.
Yeah.
And it's also why this one kind of works, because it is based on another story in that same tale mm-hmm. or in that same book.
Yeah.
Is The Lion King is based on Hamlet. That is the story of Hamlet, but with a lion.
Yeah.
And so they were like, all right, well, Lion King 2, what's it about? And like, it's whatever. But they're like, all right, what if we just go, what is the sequel to Hamlet? It's Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, which is a satire on Hamlet, but it is like a real production. Mm-hmm. It's like a real show.
Yeah.
And they're like, what if we did that for The Lion King? And The Lion King 1.5 is an adaptation of Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, but about The Lion King, with The Lion King. And it's like why that movie kind of works. It also is because Eugene Levy plays Uncle Max.
No, not Eugene Levy.
Is not Eugene Levy? Who is it?
No, Jerry Seinfeld.
Jerry Seinfeld, that's right.
Jerry Stiller. Jerry Stiller, sorry.
I don't know why I went Eugene Levy.
Jerry Stiller.
But Jerry Stiller plays Uncle Max.
He plays himself as Uncle Max. And the fact that there's a character named Uncle Max in The Lion King is just
Lion King 1.5 is actually quite good.
Mm-hmm.
They abandoned all the traditional naming.
And it's like this one, Lion King 1.5, are the two that like kind of work in this like sea of slop.
Yeah.
Pocahontas 2, Journey to the New World.
Oh my gosh.
The Little Mermaid 2, Return to the Sea. Cinderella.
See, I feel like this is why I'm not like super phased with all these sequels. Like I'm just not phased. I'm like, oh, there's another Avengers movie coming out. Cause I'm like back growing up, it was just, there was a sequel. There was a TV show for everything.
Bambi 2. Like what do you do? What is it?
Oh yeah.
Leroy and Stitch.
Oh, the Lilo and Stitch franchise.
Lilo and Stitch franchise was crazy. Cinderella 3, A Twist in Time, is the one that actually ends the whole run. It's that and The Little Mermaid, Ariel's Beginning. That people are just like, enough. Bob Iger comes in, he's like, enough of this shit.
I know. And also then Disney realized, they're like, you know, we could make sequels and put them in theaters.
Yeah.
We can make live action adaptations.
Movies. Because they move it into the live action adaptation is the thing.
But Cinderella is the first one, I think.
Disney Plus has brought back a little bit of the slot mindset that I have admittedly been a tad nostalgic for. Wilkin, like, when they're like, yeah, we're doing like a Princess and the Frog show, and we're going to do a show based on this and on that. And but also, and then we're going to do a Moana show. And then they're like, well, actually, none of this is working. We're just going to take the Moana show. We're going to stitch it together and put it in theaters and call it Moana too. And I'm like, that's the Disney I know and love, baby. That's it. That's what I've been missing out on. Yeah. Is that like money grubbing mindset. It's just like, we got that show. It's almost done.
Disney's together.
Putting in theaters, Moana 2 out this November. Like, they announced it like 5 months before it came out. It was crazy.
That's excellent.
Yeah, like Frozen. They're like, you know, we could put a Frozen 2 direct to video or on Disney Plus, but Frozen's pretty hot. We can make a lot of money if we put this in theaters.
Has anyone ever watched the Frozen 2 making of documentary?
No.
I am saying this because it is one of the more honest making of documentaries I've ever seen in my life. It is, I think it's called Into the Unknown, the making of Frozen 2. Because Frozen 2 came out and it had like, people were like, it's good, but like there's something off here. And the documentary of the making of Frozen 2, it's like in that rarefied air with like the Apocalypse Now making of documentary, where it's just like Disney animators like struggling and being like, we have no idea what this freaking movie is. We're halfway through production. We are rewriting the whole thing. None of this works. It's like I cannot believe they put it on Disney.
I actually really like Frozen 2.
I can't believe they put it on Disney Plus. It's just like a brutally honest making of, like, about the struggle of making this movie corporately mandated. It's crazy.
Oh my god.
You know why they put it on Disney Plus? Because the name Frozen gets
and all these people are still watching, all these kids are watching the Frozen 2 making of documentary.
Yeah.
But it is actually genuinely like worth watching.
And there is no Into the Unknown, the making of Aladdin, King of Thieves documentary, I imagine.
Sadly, no.
That is our podcast.
I do remember that when they would show the previews for this movie coming out, like on the VHS, they would always show a picture of Robin Williams in the recording booth.
Of course.
And be like, Robin Williams is back.
As the genie. Yeah, because...
And like little five-year-old me who had no concept of contracts or anything like that was like, wow, this is great. Robin Williams is back.
Because that carries us into a little bit of the context corner for this movie.
It is fun that they just like, he's just like, oh, let's just do it. And then put his name on the poster.
Well, because as we talked about on our last Aladdin episode, which Jill, welcome back to the podcast. It's been so long since we have you had you here, and nice we're glad to have you back. We ended on the note of the whole, you know, the Disney drama that everyone's somewhat slightly aware of the contract disputes between Robin and Disney in terms of how his likeness was marketed. And so Robin cut ties with Disney from that point on until there was a regime change in Disney and Joe Roth comes in and issues a public apology to Robin that Robin accepts and decides,
I'll come back and I'll do Aladdin 3.
Aladdin 3.
As a, like, he, we've talked a lot about, like, Robin, when he's starring in the movie, will be selective about his projects.
Yeah.
When it comes to like cameos or in this case voice roles, he's a lot less selective. He's less like, you know.
Yeah, I'm honestly like surprised he agreed, because normally with these live act or not live action, these straight to video movies, they're notorious for not getting the original.
Yeah, like he'll do, like he's done like The Fool and the Flying Ship, and he did what was that thing called that we covered?
Wish for Wings That Work. Yeah.
Like he'll just do like little animated things, or he'll cameo in someone else's movie. He doesn't have a problem with it.
This reads like he had like 2 days of recording.
Yeah.
For how much genie there is in this movie, this reads like there was like maybe a few days of recording and that was it.
Like they did not need the genie to move the plot along.
And the genie did not work for scale.
Hindrance to the plot.
It is a hindrance to the plot. And by the way, he did not work for union scale for this movie. Oh. He actually made his rate.
There are large scenes where Aladdin has done something and the genie's not. I was surprised. I was like, wait, the genie's not with him for this.
The genie
got $1 million for this.
Yeah, the genie stays with Jasmine for this movie.
Yes,
for like the most part.
It is truly the problem with this, like the biggest issue with this movie.
The biggest issue with all the Aladdin sequels, in my opinion.
It's the biggest sequel with like any movie that ends with a character becoming omnipotent or like having like free will to do whatever they want.
Yeah.
Is when you do the sequel, like
what are they
where's the tension?
Yeah.
There
should be no tension with the genie being like,
it's the problem with like, this is a weird pull, but like the Matrix sequels, which I think are very smart in how they just upend the whole idea.
Mm-hmm.
But like the problem with the end of the Matrix is Neo like becomes God.
Yeah.
Like what is the Matrix 2? Yeah. He just continues to be God. And like, I think the movie makes a smart move with that, but it's like the genie is free at the end and seemingly still has all of his power.
He also still has his chains.
Yeah. He like puts his chains back on because the design looks good, but it's a little messed up.
Yeah, it's also like, I wonder if there was like something that probably wasn't in the movie that got cut. Cause like I had seen when I was very, very young, some select episodes of the Aladdin TV show. And I feel like I remember there being like a slight case in point of like, well, what gives the genie all of his power is his ability to grant wishes.
Yeah.
Once you take that away and the genie's just a genie, they're kind of more like just like a spiritual being.
No, but in this movie, he's doing so much. But he rebuilds the entire palace with magic.
That's the thing. It's like they're not consistent with it, obviously, which poses a lot of problems. It's
the problem with the movie.
Yeah.
Why like can't he just fix the whole thing?
Yeah.
So when like the 40 thieves come into the wedding and then like they're, you know, stealing stuff and then like 10 minutes in, the genie starts fighting back. And I'm like, why did you wait 10 minutes?
He can snap his fingers and all the 40 feet turn into pigs.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, why did we wait?
Like, that's all he needs to do.
What's the Thanos quote where he's like,
all that for a drop of blood.
Doing the universe's will as tough as it is, but it always brings a smile to my face.
This does bring a smile to my face.
Josh Brolin just like literally shoving the mic in his mouth.
This does bring a smile to my
like,
face.
Josh, relax.
All right. The genie just goes on a killing spree.
That is earnestly the inherent problem of this movie.
And all the sequels,
And yet it is also the best part of this movie is that the genie is actually pretty funny sometimes.
Sometimes, I think
replaced by Iago in this.
Yeah, Iago
kind
of becomes like the one who's hanging out with Aladdin for most of the movie.
Yeah,
for no reason.
Because there's like one joke that the genie makes in this movie that I think about probably once every other week.
Mm-hmm.
It's when like the King of Thieves shows up at the palace, and like there's the SWAT team that comes out, and surrounds him. It's not that that's funny enough. But what makes me laugh is the line where he's like, do not attempt to move or we'll be shooting ourselves. I think about that like once a month and laugh to myself because that is just like a perfect joke. That is just like, that's some shit that would be in like the Naked Gun.
Yeah.
It's like a perfect joke of there's just a bunch of guys all pointing their guns at one dude in the middle. If they all fired, they would all hit each other.
Yeah.
It is like a perfectly executed little joke.
Yeah. Yeah.
I also noted that this movie has a lot of guns in it. And yet anytime they fire, they shoot lasers. Because the movie cannot have bullets in it.
Right. Because then it would have to probably be like
which does open PG-13. Up the question of how the genie has laser weaponry. But we're not going to talk about it.
Transcends time and space, dude. Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, so Robin does this movie. They get all the original cast back. I think everybody's the same.
Basically everyone comes back.
I think the Sultan might be the only one that's different.
Oh.
Also worthy of note is that Aladdin and the Return of Jafar makes... to be clear, the amount of money that it makes, I have to bring it.
$200.
$300 million.
What?
In VHS sales.
What?
On a $5 million budget.
Fuck.
It is so obvious that they're like, we will make another one.
We will look back at what we have made and see what else we can make.
Yeah. I don't really know what else to say other than like, the titular character, the King of Thieves, which like when this movie begins, because I guess I can kind of jump right into the plot unless anybody else has any other context to say. But
no, I think besides Robin like coming back to it and Disney making a lot of money, there's not much context to this movie.
So like, because right away, like it's the day of the wedding and I had not seen Return of Jafar. So I was like, wait, they're not married yet? Like we had a whole movie that just happened. Like why? Why did they get married back then? But I don't know. I'm sure there's a reason.
And I want to say Jasmine to me looks like Kim Kardashian in this.
Oh my God. Jill, you texted me this before I watched the movie, and I was like, oh, she can't look that much like Kim Kardashian. I watched the movie, I'm like, oh my God, she looks like Kim Kardashian in this movie.
I mean, it's like the degradation of the animation style, like, doesn't
it's devastating.
It's devastating it's
like,
to yeah, everybody.
I'm like, this does not look like Jasmine. I'm like, this is Kim K in animated form.
Yeah. And
did we all watch this on Disney Plus, I presume?
Yes. Yeah.
So this also
no, I pulled out the old VHS.
No, I wish I had the old VHS.
Right.
Because this movie, it drove me crazy. So Disney, when they transitioned from VHS tape to DVD and widescreen and like TVs became widescreen, Disney did this thing, or a lot of studios did, called pan and scan, where they would take the like this movie was animated for a VHS tape. So it's like a 4:3 image is the aspect ratio.
Yeah.
They would just like crop in to it.
I was wondering if they did that, because some stuff that like cropped off.
If you watch this movie, it's nuts. Nothing ever is in the frame correctly. Like the genie, if he's standing over Jasmine, his like eyes are cut off. There's the part where they do the Brady Bunch.
Yeah.
With the father and son, he like creates the Brady Bunch image.
Yeah.
And like the top and the bottom row are cut in half. It's crazy. Like,
wow.
Yeah, I picked up on that. I was like, why is he cropped off?
It's like a thing. A lot of studios did it. Disney was notorious for this.
Mm-hmm.
And they even had it happen again when Disney Plus launched in 2019. And they put The Simpsons on it because they now own The Simpsons. And The Simpsons on Disney Plus was cropped in from the fourth, or the early seasons were.
Yeah.
So it's designed for 4:3 television. And it's cropped. And there's like this one episode where Homer takes a tour of the Duff factory.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like Duff Light and like Duff Zero, let's say. And the joke of the shot is that Homer's looking at these three vats of the different types of stuff. Above it, the pipes are all connecting to the same pipe. Mm-hmm. It is the exact same beer that they're putting in all three vats.
Yeah.
On the Disney Plus crop, that you don't see the joke. It just looks like three vats of beer.
Oh my God.
It's like, it's actually like disastrous to the joke landing.
Yeah.
It's and Seinfeld weirdly did the same thing on Netflix, where there's an episode called The Hole in which the hole is cropped out of the image. Which is like very funny to
they
just
can't keep getting away with this.
Thankfully the Matt Groening, the creator of The Simpsons, was mad about this and he contacted Disney, and you can now toggle to get the original aspect ratio on Disney Plus for The Simpsons.
Yeah.
A courtesy not extended to Aladdin and the King of Thieves, a movie I had to watch and just like seething in rage every time I couldn't like every time the genie is like cut off at the eyebrows. I'm like, that's not how this shot is framed.
So did Kim K just add to the seething rage?
No, Kim K, I was like, I just couldn't believe how much it actually looked like Kim Kardashian.
That's all I could think when she was on screen. I was like, that looks like Kim.
And then I like looked up Kim Kardashian in her wedding dress, and like it is very much like the dress itself is not necessarily evocative, but it does look like she looks very much like Jasmine in this movie.
Yeah.
I also want to point out that Aladdin is very covered in this movie.
Yeah, he's not as shirtless as he normally
he's
is.
Not like, shirtless, yeah.
He's got to go back to his street rat days.
Even when he's with the King of Thieves, like not in his, you know, princely office. I'm like, man, they really wanted to cover him up a little more conservative.
Show off chest.
Privilege changed you, son.
Privilege changed you.
Used to walk around just chest out.
A little vest.
But yeah, so it's the day of their wedding, and Aladdin is out on the streets. Because he's like kind of reminiscing of his like street rat life, and he's like, oh, how will I adapt to be more princely for Jasmine and blah blah blah.
Which side note, has he been living in the palace, or has he been living on the streets all these years?
Again, what happened to Return of Jafar? It seems like nothing happened.
Yeah, how far later are we talking here?
The only thing, because again, I come from this from having not watched Return of the Jafar. The only scene difference is that Iago is back. That's the only difference that like could not be explained. Because it was like, okay, like they're getting married. The genie's hanging out. All right, this is all cool, fine. And Iago's around like, wait, where are you stuck in that lamp?
Why are we cool with him now?
I don't know. Like he's somewhat a good guy. I was able to like look past it. But then Aladdin, do you love this like trope in movies, Jeff? Where he's like, oh man. Well, it's like, well, what would your parents say? It's like, well, I never knew my parents. It's like, I never knew my father.
Yeah.
It's like that word. It's like the emphasis father. I did not know my father. He died when I was very young, and mom, Jeffrey Katzenberg, didn't like her. So she wasn't in the first movie.
Yeah. Like Jeffrey Katzenberg cut her out.
And so right away you're thinking like, okay, like the, right away it's like
the dad's gonna be in this
movie. Dad's gonna be in this movie.
Well, so he's got an absence of a father figure.
Yep. And then of course they the wedding ceremony is happening.
There's
and
a
then,
party here in Agrabah. Kind of goes.
It is like catchy.
Yeah, it is catchy.
That's it's the catchy, thing. But it's not. It's certainly not like Prince Ali.
It's not
Arabian.
Prince Ali.
It's not Arabian Nights. And so. We get clips like
Gilbert Gottfried sings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm gonna press it. and we get clips of the 40 thieves singing as well. Like they're infiltrating the wedding.
Yes.
Which I just want to say what, again, I said with Vladim, what is security like here?
Seemingly like they're only after like street rats.
This is a royal wedding.
Yeah.
And the 40 thieves manage to get in.
They invade the palace.
Yes.
They crumble it down.
To be clear, they're the best thieves in the world, and they succeed by like clambering into some baskets.
Can you imagine them? No one would get into like Will and Kate's wedding.
No.
It's a royal wedding. They have top notch security. I'm like, what is the security like?
Razul failing at his job. We talked about horribly. We talked about in our first Aladdin episode that I'm fascinated by like the bureaucracy of Agrabah.
This has
like,
lots of Razul bureaucracy bits.
This is like the equivalent of like the Trump attempted assassination from last year, where it's like the Secret Service is under audit and there's like, we just don't have enough agents. Guys are working 18-hour days. It's just like Razul's like, I'm sorry that you're wedding guy. We don't have enough guards. We're working 18-hour days. We just don't have enough guys to really patrol the way that we should for your protection.
Meanwhile, they can put the entire force on this kid stealing bread.
Yeah.
Well, later when they go to arrest the 40 thieves, it's like three guys go. There's seemingly three guards
that can arrest 40 people
in the entire. Well, they only arrest 35, to be clear. Five of them are fine.
First shot of the episode.
The 40 thieves invade the wedding.
Yeah, and
39 of them just do like normal thievery.
And then one of them whose face is covered in talk and is voiced by John Rhys Davies. I'm like, gee, I wonder if he's going to be important.
there's an unverifiable rumor that the dad in that Kazim, the King of Thieves, is supposed to look like Sean Connery because they wanted Sean Connery to voice it.
Mm.
But then he was unavailable, so they went with John Rhys Davies. I just don't know if you get Sean Connery for this movie. This doesn't seem like...
Those were high ambitions.
Yeah, that's a little bit...
He does... knowing that he does kind of look like Sean Connery...
He does give a Sean Connery vibe.
Yeah. He looks like young Sean Connery a little bit. It would have been great if he talked like this. Indiana.
Let it go.
We're named the dog Indiana. The dog. You are named after the dog.
Punishment band. But in the Hebrew language, Jehovah starts with an I.
J. An excellent joke. An incredible joke. A joke only matched by, if you do not attempt to move, we will be shooting ourselves.
Yes. oh, God.
The 40 thieves are invading, which I love that the genie is kind of special because he's blue. He like stands out, but there is a blue man in the 40 thieves and a gray man.
Yeah. So there's a lot of questions.
There's a lot of like different, I'm like, okay, we're getting some weird, unhealthy looking skin tones going on here.
Yeah. And so the King of Thieves, his name is Kazim.
Kazim.
So he is after this like scepter.
Yes.
That has the spirit of
Osiris. Oracle.
It's an oracle.
Oracle.
Which, side note, someone gave Aladdin and Jasmine for their wedding present.
I
guess.
I do want to be clear. Osiris, you're right. The oracle is in the... Osiris is a guest at the wedding.
Yes.
Robin doing the like interviews on the wedding red carpet.
Oh, that was great.
Or it's like a good bit where it's just like, we have Osiris. Look, it's Caesar and Cleopatra, and they're bringing a salad.
Oh, and when he says Osiris, and it just turns around to like an eagle's face.
It's an eagle. My favorite
that
is...
That was a good bit.
Hi, so you're Thor? Yeah, it hurts.
this was good. I'll admit, this part was pretty
good. But then the 40 thieves invade the wedding.
Yeah.
There's chaos all going around. Aladdin fights the King of Thieves for the scepter. And
Genie decides to take on the noble role of protecting the ceiling.
Yeah, he just like grows big and like is holding the ceiling. It does lead to, like,
you know, zapping the 40 thieves.
It does lead to a good joke when like he's like, I'm holding it. And then he looks and the rest of the ceiling has collapsed, except for the exact outline of him that's just floating in the air.
Yeah.
Good joke.
Good joke.
One thing I did wonder watching this is, did Robin Williams get a script?
Unclear. We didn't mention this, but they did record this entire movie with Dan Castellaneta.
Yeah.
They had recorded and animated most of this movie before Robin Williams agreed to be in it.
Because I just feel like he doesn't move the plot along, and all his lines were just kind of like improv.
And so I'm sure, like, because basically, like, they had already animated most of the genie with a different guy's voice. And so they had to, like, reanimate the genie's face.
Yeah.
But I think Robin just has to, like, stick with the confines of what's happening.
Yeah, which isn't optimal for him.
And, like, it does lead to, like, some good jokes, but
there's a lot less, like, body humor contortion bits going on in here.
Because I'm sure the thing that's, like, kind of happening here is Aladdin 1 is mostly, like, Robin's ad-libbing, making it funny.
Mm-hmm.
And then Aladdin 2 and 3 are written with someone trying to emulate Robin's comedic sensibilities into a script.
Yeah.
And so by the time you loop back around to Robin coming back into that, he's doing a script written like him, but you can't capture him in a script.
Yeah.
Although there were some, like, there's a Mrs. Doubtfire reference.
Yeah, there is a Mrs. Doubtfire reference. He turns into Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yeah, and I do wonder if they did reanimate a few things.
I'm sure they, like, they had time to, like, do some reanimations, because, like, you don't have that whole, like, SWAT sequence.
Yeah.
With all the various characters he's playing. Come on, guys!
But then, how do we find out that, like, because all the thieves eventually leave, so does Kazim. This is before the reveal.
Yes, the 40 thieves all escape.
And they use the scepter.
Aladdin accidentally activates the scepter in the
Iago, I think.
Iago.
And he's like, what is this thing?
And Iago gets three wishes.
And this is where, like, it really is just like, I'm like, this looks like every, like,
tape
video game that, like,
like
mummy adjacent, like, video game animation around this time. Like, it's like somewhere in, like, the Bermuda Triangle of, like, Return the Slab.
Yeah.
The mummy episode from Jimmy Neutron, and, like, the like, video games set in Egypt that you play.
Yeah. It's not good. Very grainy. But,
kind of looks great. It's kind of incredible. Right. This movie looks like, you know, dirt.
There's a lot of blank stares in the background. Yeah,
the animation I'm doing the animation right now for the listener at home,
which is unanimated because Jeff is just staring blankly into the void.
Yeah, as I am wont to do.
But the Oracle, what does the Oracle say?
The Oracle gives them one question.
You want a cookie?
And Iago wastes it by asking who she is.
Yes. But she does show Aladdin his father.
Yeah.
And where he is.
And he's alive.
And rather than
kind of think hard on his question. He's like, what do I want this random thing to tell me? There's a song involved.
And then, like, he's just like, why doesn't he just ask the genie, teleport me to my dad? Can the genie not do that?
He's busy on construction.
Yeah, he's seemingly trying to construct. In the first movie, the castle reappears by magic at the end after Jafar is defeated.
I just, like, they really had to, like, nullify the genie, because you're right, it's like the genie can just fix everything.
Yeah. It's the problem with the movie is, like, I do, like, it's a good joke when he's like, oh, we'll get on building this, and he snaps his fingers and, like, Iago, Abu, and Raja turn into, like, construction foremen.
Yeah.
And he's like, don't trust the monkey with any power tools, all right? We're going to get going on here. They got union laborers. Like, it's a good joke, but it's like, can he just fix it? Mm-hmm. Can he just do it?
He should.
We're not confined by the limits of three wishes. He should just be able to do this. Because Aladdin, like, and Iago, for reasons, decide to go meet his dad.
Yeah, and I do feel like Iago shines in this movie a little bit. Like, I feel like Gilbert Gottfried got to...
He got to really flex.
To the improv.
Yeah.
I think it's because he agrees to be in the movie from the start.
Yeah. A scene that audibly made me laugh is after, like, the wedding and everything's torn down. Iago just goes, like, good luck getting your security deposit back.
Good luck getting the catering deposit back.
Yeah, that's right. Good luck getting the catering to the Sultan. And I audibly laughed at that. I was like, that was a good joke.
It is a good joke. Because they're with the Aladdin and Iago go to the King of Thieves.
The hideaway, which is Mount Sesame, because we see Kasim standing before the Red Sea and in a gesture like Moses says, open sesame, and then the sea parts and they're able to ride their horses into
the mountain.
And
there's a bit of lava on the ground too for some
reason. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think they just drew it orange. It's just an orange color. But then Aladdin on the carpet with Abu and Iago they race through and they're able to get into the mountain and they're all seen by the 40 thieves. And of course, Kasim, he steps up to them. And I think this is when he takes off his whole bandana mask thing. And that's where it's revealed an older version of Aladdin.
Yeah, it's his dad.
With whites in his hair.
And Aladdin's also like, he's not a prisoner. He's the King of Thieves.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Oh, God.
And so they're like, well, we have to kill him.
This is where Saluk comes into play.
This is where Saluk comes into play. He's the bad guy. Voiced by Jerry Orbach, of all people.
I know. I saw that. I was surprised.
Yeah.
He's got like... he's got like Wolverine style claws.
Yeah.
Not that come out of him, but like,
well, this
brass
fight,
knuckles.
It's a brass knuckle, but with blades.
But with blades. Because this fight sequence, this gets a little bit tense.
It does. There's some slow mo. There's a fight to the death, which is a little dark for a Disney. Like, pretty dark for Disney.
Because it's like, Aladdin can stay if he joins the 40 Thieves, and you can only join the 40 Thieves via the challenge.
Hence why they call it
the
40
Thieves.
There
can only be 40 of them.
Yeah, there can't be 41 Thieves.
Yeah, it can't be 41 Thieves.
That would suck.
It can't be 39 Thieves. It has to be the 40 Thieves.
Yeah, it's like if someone just like dies of a heart attack, like they got to just go out and be like, you want to join the 40 Thieves? Some like random dude.
Right.
The waiting list.
Cholesterol is the 40th thief.
Yeah. The thief of time.
Thief of time.
But the like... He has to fight Saluk.
Yeah.
For position in the 40 Thieves.
And he almost dies, but he is able to throw him off a cliff.
The whole fight, it's like that part of The Lion King where Scar and Simba are fighting in slow-mo. It's like that, but for 5 minutes. That's
also, I love that there's no audio. It's like silent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a silent
dramatic
fight
tension.
But Saluk is thrown off the cliff, as most Disney villains are.
But
he survives.
Yeah, he survives.
He wrestles a shark.
And then Kasim, he does wrestle a shark, which is very crazy. It's a crazy thing to do.
Yes.
Kasim is just like, oh, a lot and more. He's Scottish for some reason. I'm sure.
Kills Saluk, and they're all like totally fine with it.
Yeah, he's like, boy, the reason I left you and your mother is to pursue the Hand of Midas so I could get you some gold for our family.
Yeah, the Hand of Midas, which is an artifact that is said to turn everything it touches into gold.
There's a lot of artifacts in this movie.
There are, yeah. I almost thought the twist would have been funny if instead of the scepter they were after the lamp of Jafar. But again, this is coming from somebody who's not seen Return of Jafar. How does Jafar, for folks who've seen Return of Jafar, how does he get out of the lamp?
George Costanza gets him out of the lamp. This is true.
And like, is Jafar just a genie in the movie, or is he
Jafar's a genie, but like turns back into his normal self.
But he's a genie.
Yeah, he's a genie.
Who has to give George Costanza 3 wishes. Yes.
I think one of them is like a sandwich or something.
Great.
But like, it's truly like George Costanza. It's like Jason Alexander's being like, hey, it's me, George Costanza from Seinfeld, and I'm in Aladdin. Like, it's like his whole energy in the movie.
Is Iago in Return of Jafar?
Iago is in Return of Jafar. It's how he joins the team. I watched this movie like a few years ago. So that like, I'm not that like removed from it.
I haven't watched Return of Jafar since I was like 4.
Another podcast I listened to like did the films of Musker and Clemens, and they covered Return of Jafar as like a bonus episode, so I had to watch it.
Very good.
But
Aladdin is...
He's welcome to the 40 Thieves with a song that had, for Jill and I think both, like a weird Pavlovian response to one section of it.
Yeah.
I can't even remember what the section was, but like, when I watched it, I was like, oh, that's on the
lamp.
Yes, it's that.
We please.
It's that it like brought us back.
Furiously typing.
I am furiously typing. I'm bringing up Welcome to the 40 Thieves.
I don't know the lyrics, but like
I can bring up the exact shot.
I'm looking up the lyrics. Let's see.
Yeah. Where is it? Come on. Yeah.
Oh, scheming up a scam.
Here it is. I found it. Yeah, that's it. This is so exciting for Stuart. Yeah. That was like a major part of like the ad for this movie on the VHSs.
But then they also cut back to like cut lots of grub to share, pull up an easy chair, welcome to the 40 Thieves. Like they cut back to an earlier part of the song.
Yeah, it like stressed me out when I caught it. I was like, it like really sent me back.
Good.
Yeah, I was like, I remember watching previews for this.
But anyway, Kazim, Aladdin's like, come back to the palace with me, Dad. Let me show you my wife. And he's like,
fiance.
Okay.
Okay.
And so he goes with him and they go back. And then conveniently Sulu like crawls out of a hole in the ground this time.
No, he wrestles a shark.
And then he goes to the palace as well and grabs the captain of the guard and says, 40 thieves in that cave over there.
Which they still manage to kind of screw up.
And so the guards go and they say, open sesame, but not before like forgetting it. They do like a little, you know, open Hieronymus.
And then one guy's like, I thought it was open sesame.
And then these three guards somehow arrest all like 35 out of the 40 thieves.
That's your security force right there.
Yeah. Like, these guys are like supermen.
Yeah.
But they arrest all but five of the 40 thieves who just like hang out in a little tent. And then Salute comes back and is like, you know, Kazim is the one who sold you out, right? I'm like, really?
Hmm.
And he does his little song, Are You In or Out? Asking them if they're going to hang out with him. They're like, we'll hang out with you. We'll go. There's like the one who has magical abilities. He like floats up the rope. You ever know that guy?
Yeah.
There's like the 40 thief and he just like, there's like a barrel and the lid just like starts floating up and he like is on the rope as it goes up. So he'll be a magic man. But they like back at the palace, Aladdin is like, the genie is like, security is tight. There'll be no one getting around. Look at the security force. And like the robot from RoboCop pops out of a hole in the ground with like the lasers, except it has the genie's face on it. It's like the TX-1000 or something like that. And then Aladdin's like, I would like to introduce you to the King of Thieves. And this is a good Robin bit.
Yeah.
Where he's just like, code red, and like 700 SWAT guys start running around with, you know, in full body armor with weapons.
There's a whole Scottish cavalry.
The whole Scottish cavalry. There's the come on, boys. And there's like an actual Western cavalry. There's World War II bombers jumping out of a plane yelling, Geronimo, Navajo. And then Pocahontas appears and goes, Pocahontas, and jumps out.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the, if you attempt to move, we'll be shooting ourselves.
Yeah.
Aladdin's like, Genie, this is my dad. If you're Aladdin's dad and the King of Thieves, then I just got one question for you. Well, if I eat the chicken or the sea bass. which is good. I do
very
like
good.
It's very good.
Yeah.
And then King of Thieves convinces the Sultan and Jasmine. He's like, oh, I was taken captive by them, but I'm okay.
Yeah, I'm a normal guy.
And then we have wedding number two, which are all these wedding guests just hanging around waiting for the wedding to happen?
They're on speed dial. On
Caesar
call.
Traveled through time and space to be here, to be clear. Like,
Osiris, a god of Egypt, just came down from the heavens.
Yes.
Because well, I'd be mad if I kept getting invited back to this wedding and it wasn't happening.
Yeah, it'd be a little frustrating.
I
did think it was interesting, wedding number two. Aladdin has a different outfit for this one.
I assume they have duplicates, multiples.
It's blue now, but Jasmine has the same dress. Or sorry, Kim Kardashian has the same.
Yeah. Jasmine, who unfortunately doesn't really get much in this movie.
No, she gets a song.
She gets a song. That's about it.
She just kicks some ass later.
But. Yeah. Kasim tries to steal the scepter with the oracle, but is caught by the Sultan, And this is where they learned that Kasim is the king of the 40 thieves.
Yes.
And Aladdin steps in and then kind of like admits to, yeah, this is my dad. He's the king of 40 thieves and I am one of the 40.
Yeah. And Justin's like, I let you out of the house for one day and you joined the 40 thieves.
I am thief number 29.
Yes.
But the Sultan's cool with it.
Yeah.
He's like, okay, fine. And, but then
they do lock up Kasim.
Yeah.
They do lock him up.
Aladdin busts him out.
Well, that also, Aladdin, first off, he's like pissed at his dad.
He's like,
but he's like, I want him out of my life. But then he risks his life to save him from prison.
Family. Can't live with him. Can't live without him.
Which I was like, if you wanted him out of your life, he's in a pretty good spot.
Yeah, like you put him in jail at the place you live. Like that's kind of convenient. If you want to see him, he's just downstairs.
Also, Yago's in prison with him too.
Yes.
Yago commanded the gang for his nefarious ways.
Yago finally being punished for the sins of his past. So Yago and Kasim are freed by Aladdin and they go off to find the hand of Midas,
mm-hmm.
which like the.
Oh, no, wait, I think Aladdin goes back.
Aladdin does go back and apologizes to the Sultan, but is like, I must help save my dad.
Yeah.
Like that's basically the pitch, right?
Well, because when does Saluk capture Kasim?
Well, Kasim and Yago go back to Mount Sesame, where Saluk is like, I am the king of thieves now, and arrests
right.
Kasim.
That's what it is. And the seven thieves that are
yeah,
still
seven,
around.
Seven, like, guys.
Yeah.
Including, yeah, it's me, the king of thieves. I'm the thief. I like that guy.
It's a good guy.
That guy hangs out.
But then Aladdin, Jasmine, Abu.
Oh, that's right. Yago comes back. I was trying to figure out. Yago comes back to tell Aladdin, like,
yeah.
Your father's in danger.
And the carpet. They all go back. They use the Scepter Oracle to find out that the Hand of Midas is within a floating island.
Yes.
The Vanishing Isle.
Vanishing Isle that submerges in and out
Can
of
I
the
be
water.
Straight? I love a Vanishing Island.
Vanishing Islands.
Vanishing Islands in fantasy
when
always
are
hit.
They bad?
Any? Like, we love the classics.
Yeah.
We love Temple Submerged by Sand. But Vanishing Island,
mm-hmm.
it always hits.
I'm a little disappointed in this Vanishing Isle, though, because it's on a turtle.
It does, like, the turtle does
submerge. It needs to be on a turtle.
Yeah.
Like, it was like they couldn't figure, like there's so much magic in this movie, and it can't be like Hamanoptra, where it's like, oh, it's only viewable at a certain day and time.
I love giant turtles with cities on their
like,
backs.
It goes crazy. It kind of goes crazy.
Everyone here's seen Legend of Korra, right?
You mean Avatar or Last Airbender?
The Legend of Korra.
No, I haven't seen The Legend of Korra.
Have you seen Legend of Korra, Jill? Okay. Well, there's a sequence where,
yeah,
like the origins,
two against one,
the origins of bending. Essentially, they tell like the first ever Avatar.
They
story.
Do the turtle in the Last Airbender show too.
They do that too, but this is a continuation off of that thread. That there are these turtles, and each turtle holds like a civilization, and each turtle is able to bestow the gift of bending one of the elements to humans as like a borrowing gift. But one guy decides to keep the power of bending, and he goes to all four turtles to get all four.
It's because of the idea of the world bending. Turtle and the turtles all the way down, which weirdly becomes like a John Green young adult novel.
And the let's not forget the turtle deity in the Stephen King book, It.
Oh my God.
I tried to figure out this turtle Vanishing Isle was anything from the 40 Thieves, but it is Aladdin and King of Thieves original.
It's an original concept.
And I love when Jasmine sees it and she's like, when he's like, it's the Vanishing Isle. And Jasmine goes, on the back of a turtle. And she's like totally not surprised by that.
Yeah.
And it's like, Aladdin just turns around and is like, of course, I can see it. I have eyes.
Yeah.
Like, look, come on, listen. And so then he frees Kasim. Aladdin frees Kasim on the aisle. And they work together to find the hand,
yes.
which is in
this whole scene. When I'm talking about like the aesthetic that I'm trying to evoke,
yeah.
this whole island bit is like
the titular bit.
This feels like a 2001 video game adaptation of like a Rugrats or SpongeBob or something. And like you just have a weird level that looks like this.
Yes.
It's like some sort of vision that I just remember from my childhood.
Yes. But they go to try to grab the hand. But
meanwhile, though, for some reason, the genie is just in the turtle's mouth.
Yeah.
This whole time.
Why?
It's like he's trying to keep the island afloat.
Is that what he's trying to do?
Yeah, he's like trying to keep the island afloat.
He is a god.
So like,
can do whatever the
hell.
He does
like, he goes into the turtle's mouth.
But why would you go in the turtle? I would go under the turtle.
It's unexplained what's going on here.
It's just to save money.
It gets the genie out of the picture for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
While Aladdin is dead, they get the hand of Midas. If you touch it against anything, it turns into gold. They say, Saluk, take this, and they throw it at him, and he just grabs it, and he turns into gold and dies.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a very anticlimactic defeat for Saluk. There's like, hey, Saluk, take this, and he's like, okay. Ah! It turns into a statue of gold. They get away. Like, they get away. They get on the carpet.
They also sacrifice the hand of King Midas.
Yeah. Kashima's like, I almost lost the thing I care about most for this. And he throws it, and it lands on the 40 Thieves ship and turns into gold, and all the 40 Thieves sink.
I don't even think he says, I think he says, like, kind of like, I lost a lot trying to go after this, which implies that he lost his family because he has been on this search for like 20 some years. And which I'm like, we didn't think about that earlier.
Why Sean Connery should have been cast as Cassim.
Indiana, let's go.
But like,
here's my
problem. Like, you're just having this realization now.
Like, here's the problem. If
I never understood it, Dad. Neither did Mom.
No, The Last Crusade is good because you have to let go of the Holy Grail because it's like in a place you can't grab it. You're going to sacrifice it to try and grab it. He already has the hand of Midas. And he just throws it in the ocean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like movies have done this before. Like Titanic obviously ends with her throwing the jewel into the ocean.
Yeah.
But that's like she's finally letting go of him.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing? Throwing the hand, like you spent all this time getting the hand of mice. I understand it's not like you're like, this is a curse now, but don't just like bring it back to the palace, lock it up somewhere. I don't know, or maybe no one should have this power. And he was right to throw it in the ocean,
yeah.
Maybe,
anyway, if he threw it in the ocean, shouldn't the whole ocean have turned into gold? Another question we dare not ask.
And then we're back in Agrabah,
yeah, the wedding happens.
Oh, wait, do you have to pay tribute to one of my favorite lines, though? Which is one of them says, the turtle is diving.
The turtle is diving. I do like when the turtle's mouth opens and the genie comes out in the Steamboat Willie boat.
Yeah, I also did love they really tried to play up the drama here. Like, there was some slow mo going on. They tried to make these fight scenes dramatic.
They really, really tried. They put in the effort.
Like when Saluk is going for the hand and it's in slow-mo animation.
Yeah, but then like they go back and the wedding happens. And
finally.
Cassim watches it from far away because he's a wanted criminal. And he hangs out with Iago. And they go off on their own adventures, which sadly did not become its own franchise. Cassim and Iago.
Come on, man.
I'd have watched it. But
don't say that, Jeffrey. Disney might hear that.
Yeah, they might actually do it and turn it into a real movie that releases. Yeah.
A Disney Plus series.
Got to be very careful.
Kashim. And then finally, Aladdin and Jasmine kiss. And then the peddler comes back finally.
Yes, the titular peddler. From
the song
first...
they recorded for the end of the first Aladdin comes back.
Yeah.
So it goes short and sweet. They were wed down the streetway. Their marriage should be true. I'm about to sneeze. So it goes short and sweet. They were wed down the street. May their marriage be truly blessed. And then he's like, you want to buy a rug? It's like the end of the movie.
Yeah, because I couldn't think of what else to rhyme it with. Oh, it's with a kiss and a hug. Sure, you don't want a rug.
Mm-hmm. Sure, the price is right. So salam, worthy friend, come back soon. That's the end. Till another Arabian night.
Arabian night!
And then Aladdin with clothes on and Kim Kardashian.
Yeah, they fly off into the moon, and the
Kim
movie
has finally
ends.
Found her love of her life after Kanye.
She finally found a replacement for Kanye. Then directed by Tad Stones.
What a film.
What a film.
And Raja only appears at the end, which was pretty
Raja? Annoyed. He's not in it?
He's only at the end at the wedding.
It's messed up. Where'd he go?
Like,
Justice for Raja.
Where's he at?
I know.
CCH Pounder plays the Oracle in this. That's crazy.
Where was Raja the whole time? Why are they to take them? I would be past going to three weddings.
Yeah, like the Caesar's like, let's see if this one actually works out without the thieves coming in.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like real life Kim Kardashian, all the weddings. Did they have to bring a gift each time?
Yeah, they're like, this is their third Caesar salad we've had to make. I'm getting really sick of this. But this movie comes out. It releases on VHS, August of 1996. I am not yet alive when this releases. We are getting increasingly close to my arrival date in this earth as these episodes go. Stuart, you were like six this time. I'm kidding.
fuck off.
This movie sold an insane amount of VHS tapes.
Don't tell me. I'm so nervous.
10.3 million units, generating at least $130 million in sales revenue.
See, what you got to realize about these is, like, back then, they were just, everything was on VHS, and they were advertising the future movies on VHS. So you just had this captive audience of children.
So, Stuart, I'm going to ask you a question. Mm-hmm. In the all-time best-selling VHS tapes in the world, what do you think, how far do you think this movie is?
Eight.
Well, actually, I shouldn't say top 10. What number do you think this is in totality?
I think this is like the 12th highest selling VHS.
Is it straight to VHS or just like general VHS?
General.
12.
The 26th. 53.
Okay.
Most successful. The Return of Jafar is the 15th.
Whoa.
Can I run for you down the best selling VHS tapes of all time?
Sure.
It is The Lion King, yeah. Aladdin. Snow White, Titanic. This is from one, number one being the most successful. Lion King, Aladdin, Snow White, Titanic, Jurassic Park, Beauty and the Beast, Independence Day, Toy Story, Pocahontas, Cinderella, Toy Story 2, Forrest Gump, 101 Dalmatians, Shrek, The Return of Jafar, E.T., The Extraterrestrial, The Lion King 2, Simba's Pride, Fantasia, Mrs. Doubtfire, Pinocchio, How the Grinch Stole Christmas, The Jim Carrey One, Home Alone, Bambi, Tarzan, Batman, Aladdin, and The King of Thieves, The Little Mermaid, Babe. That is that's the top 30.
Disney just owns
it's like
that
all
market.
Disney.
They just own the whole media market. That's crazy.
The amount of money that these, like, the Lion King made over $1 billion in VHS sales.
Wow.
Which is,
I mean, I believe crazy. It because it was easy. It was for kids. Like, kids are primarily the ones watching.
Yeah.
TV.
If you include DVDs and Blu-rays, The Lion King is still number one, but Finding Nemo replaces at number two. Wow. For the amount of DVDs that it sold.
My God.
Well, there weren't iPad kids back then. It was,
yeah. And there were also at minimum three Finding Nemo copies that I
Jeffrey burned through one of them.
I burned through like a VHS of Finding Nemo because I watched it so much it like actually just stopped working.
Good.
Which is crazy when you think about how many freaking times I watched the watch. We need to give kids Letterboxd so that we can just like see the amount of times that they log Finding Nemo.
Well, I will say like my copy of Lion King VHS is like bad.
Yeah,
because I've watched that like so many times. I've definitely have burned through it. I think it's like mostly unwatchable at this point.
Yeah, that was a big one for me. Lion King.
There's like, I will actually go back, but there's like someone who's like kid is on the spectrum, and the only movie they want to watch, I think, was like Ants or B Movie.
It was the B Movie, and they streamed it like an insane number of times in one year.
And like the mom had, I think, a Letterboxd account or a Netflix account or something where like it was registering.
Mm-hmm.
And people were like, who's this absolute mad lad watching the B Movie every day and logging it on Letterboxd? And it was like somehow she's like, yeah, my son is on the spectrum. It's the only movie he'll watch is B Movie. And so like it was like they had like 700 views of B Movie logged.
Oh
which
my
is crazy.
God. That's insane. B Movie goes hard.
Think about these VH, it makes sense because we didn't have, there was no iPad, there was no Netflix, there was no Disney Plus back then. Like you had to.
It's what you had to watch.
Kids, you had to buy a VHS tape.
But and like it's crazy, like there was a that was a viable market where you could just make a movie like this, put it on a VHS tape, and it was a massive financial success.
And then you could advertise your next VHS tape movies on that VHS tape.
The Washington Post writes that this movie is strictly Saturday morning cartoon quality, which is such a savage review.
Like there's so many live straight to video Disney movies that I don't even know if I saw, but I feel like I did because I remember seeing the previews for them.
Yeah, it's just before all the ads, where it's like Pocahontas 2. This time she's in Britain.
Like The Hunchback of Notre Dame 2.
What is that movie?
I saw that.
What is The Hunchback of Notre Dame 2?
He finds love.
It happens again.
He finds love.
He finds what happened to Esmeralda?
Esmeralda ditches him.
She ditches him for that, like,
that's crazy. She goes with Kevin Kline. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Pocahontas 2, Journey to the New World. Mel Gibson not returning.
No, I think John Smith, like, dies or something.
In real life, he dies.
He's like pushed off a bridge or something.
That's crazy. Talk
about John Smith, Pocahontas.
I think he comes back, though.
Wild.
I'm trying to find the craziest one. I'm looking through. Atlantis 2 is. Sir, have you seen Atlantis 2?
Not in a long time.
Atlantis 2 is just four episodes of a TV show that they didn't make stitched together. So it's like, I am Milo in Atlantis 2, and I am going on an adventure to Utah. And they go and they fight like a ghost cowboy. And then it's like 22 minutes later, they're like, we are back on the ship. We show now we going to Peru. And it's like, wait, what's going on here? And you're like, this is just, four episodes are like hand stitched together with a weird interlude.
Oh, that's so funny.
I feel like the wildest one might be Cinderella 3, Twists in Time.
Cinderella 3, Twists in Time is kind of hard to beat.
There is some scene that I've only seen online where the prince jumps out of a window. It is so poorly animated, but he like literally just dives out of a window.
You know, it was bad when they were making like Brother Bear 2. And it's like the movies that didn't even do that well were making direct-to-video sequels of.
Yeah.
Enough.
They were mining.
Kronk's New Groove, pretty good. Anyway.
There was no Snow White 2, though.
Yeah, the cowards.
They didn't go that Dumbo 2. They didn't go that far back.
Dumbo 2, he bullied again. he goes to a new town and they once again bully him for having big ears. Like that. Like what else in the movie? You know,
Pinocchio 2. He turns back into a doll.
Pinocchio,
but it's like graphic. And
Pinocchio 2. He goes back to his lying ways.
He's
an adult living a normal adult life in Italy, and he's like, I was a little wooden boy on the point. And then he's like, they're like, you pay your taxes this year? And he's like, I paid my taxes. He turns back into
He goes back to, oh, no.
They chop him up for firewood.
My brain went to a very, very dark place again. I will shall not go back there. Goes back.
I do wonder how they picked what old movies. Because like Peter Pan and Lady and the Tramp were worthy.
Baby. Bambi. Is like, how do you Bambi. Pick Bambi? Who's like, you know what the kids are craving?
Bambi
2.
The return of the mother.
Because like the only one they gratify with like a live action sequel is Fantasia 2000, which is like Michael Eisner just like going full Richard Nixon mode, locking himself in Disney studios, like getting extremely paranoid about his job, being like, Walt Disney made a Fantasia. I gotta make a Fantasia. It's actually really good.
Fantasia 2000 is actually
Fantasia 2000 is great.
Yeah.
It's possible.
It's original.
Yeah.
It's not real. It's a sequel, but it's not the same characters. It's the same concept.
The reincarnation of Walt Disney and going fully crazy. Anyway. So the movie comes out. Huge success. Robin Williams really like he's in it like just for it really doesn't have any effect on the like the sway of his career where we're at.
Yeah, not really. I think he mostly just does this as like a means of reparations for their fallout.
It's just like, it comes out between like he's in Jumanji, Birdcage, Jack. He's got like a lot else going on right around this time.
And like I said, this really feels like he was in the recording booth for like a couple of days.
Yeah, he's like not in the movie a lot. And
And it's like he has kids at this point.
It's like, not like anyone's ever going to think about this when they're thinking about the genie. You think about Aladdin and this is like a fun footnote.
Yeah, yeah. But it doesn't stop Disney from obviously plastering his name and face all
on the
over
poster.
Because it's like literally like Aladdin with a big genie at the very top again. And it also even includes starring Robin Williams.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. And I still, like I said, I even remember being little and seeing previews and being like, wow, Robin Williams is back, even though I had like no concept of
who Robin Williams was. Like, you're like, he is the genie.
He's the genie.
Like, wow, they got the original genie back. That's so cool.
Yeah. Does anybody else have any final thoughts before I take us out?
They tried to make a fourth one in 2005, but Disney said no.
Good.
Because they had the ending with the peddler.
I don't know what you would have called it. You would have had to pick one of the other 998 available tales.
And then they made the live action Will Smith version.
They do make the live action Will Smith. That's the next like major Aladdin thing that comes out.
No Iago in that one.
Nope.
Yeah, there's no Iago.
There's a Iago in it. He just doesn't speak. It's That's Alan true. Tudyk going.
Cowards.
I know.
Cowards. A lot of them. Jill, thank you so much for coming on once again for Aladdin, King of Thieves.
Thank you for having me for Aladdin and the King of Thieves. Funny story. I did ask Jeffrey initially for this. And Aladdin was available and was like, you can do that instead if you want. So
that is the thing I should have mentioned this at the top of the episode. But like when I was like, Jill, which Robin Williams movie would you like to cover? She's like, I'll take Aladdin and the King of Thieves. And I said, don't you just want like Aladdin?
I was like, surely someone has taken Aladdin.
And I was like, no one has taken Aladdin.
It just seems like that seems like a stretch.
Aladdin seems like, for in terms of our guests, it just seems like such like the obvious choice that everybody would probably assume. It's like, well, surely someone has.
That's what was like. You know what? I'm gonna lowball it.
Right.
Aladdin and the King of Thieves, because like surely no one has asked for that.
And you hit a home run with not just the OG Aladdin, but Aladdin 3.
What was funny is that nobody ended up asking for Aladdin besides Jill.
That's crazy.
But someone did ask for Aladdin and the King of Thieves. It was really funny.
It's really good.
Wait, someone else did?
Yeah.
Who?
Mark Tilly was like, if no one's doing Aladdin 3, I'll do Aladdin 3.
we have competing.
Well, I'm like, actually, funny enough, someone did take Aladdin 3.
You do have someone for Aladdin 3.
I don't know. Well, it may not have been the top of Robin's career, but it was a hotly contested episode of Bobbin for Robin.
Yes.
Yeah, Joe, you're lucky that this wasn't like the Birdcage or Mrs. Doubtfire, which was like blood was being spilled over who got those movies. It was a fight.
Oh, boy.
I'm not surprised about Mrs. Doubtfire.
I earnestly believe 7 people asked for Mrs. Doubtfire.
I believe it.
Like, I genuinely think 7
that,
people
asked. That has seared itself into so many of our generation's brains.
Sam Kelly, who... we've already listened to this episode, just got extremely lucky that he was the first person to ask for Mrs. Doubtfire.
Very good.
I feel like in Robin's, like, just looking back on Robin Williams, I think Mrs. Doubtfire and Aladdin are probably his, like, most well-known, remembered.
From this period, I'd say for, like, our generation, right?
I'd say from our generation, it's, like, Aladdin, Doubtfire are, like, the ones that, of our age groups, probably, like,
family actor mode.
Yeah.
If you're talking like dramatic actor, probably Good Will Hunting.
Yeah.
But like, I would say like, or maybe Miss Dead Poets Society over that. But like Mrs. Doubtfire, Aladdin is like.
Yeah. I just feel like when you say Robin Williams movie, your brain instantly goes to the genie or Mrs. Doubtfire.
Because when people say Jumanji, I actually think of Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
I think of Robin Williams.
I think of Robin Williams.
I'm kidding. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
I like the image of Jumanji.
I got to watch Jumanji. Oh, no, we've already done our Jumanji episode.
Because we're definitely recording this in order. And with that, Jill, thank you so much for coming on for Bobbin for Robin, Aladdin, and the King of Thieves. And thank
starring
you.
Starring Kim Kardashian.
Yeah.
Starring Kim K.
Starring Kim Kardashian in this role.
Yes.
And thank you to the audience for listening to our sequel for Aladdin, Aladdin 3, King of Thieves. You'll join us next week for The Secret Agent.
Movie that definitely exists.
One of other Robin Williams' uncredited roles that he'll pop in for. as always, remember to rate, review, comment, like, and subscribe. Whatever platform.
Bob Hoskins. I'm the secret agent.
Whatever platform.
I am the secret agent. I'm Bob Hoskins, isn't it?
You have been talking to the cops, have you, mate?
You haven't been talking to the Jedi, have you, mate?
You got to eat your asparagus, Bruce.
Stuart, aren't you so glad I sent you that video?
Yes.
To listen at home, Google Ben.
Hey, Michael, how you doing? I'm doing pretty good.
Google Ben Mendelsohn talking to the cops and watch the video. It's very entertaining.
But you have to understand that you see what Bruce Wayne did. What, hey, Michael, you haven't talked to the cops, have you, mate?
Now we're just reciting this bit.
Okay. Join us next week for The Secret Agent. As always, remember to rate, review, comment, like, subscribe, whatever platform you listen on, of which we're on many. Pretty much whatever platform you get your podcast from, we are on it. As always, special thanks to Rebecca for the graphic design, Michael Van Bloden Smith for the theme music that is taking you out. See you all next week for The Secret Agent.